This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is Colin Bevan. Colin writes and administers the environmental blog noimpactman.com, which was named one of the world's top 15 environmental websites by Time magazine. In 2006, he launched a year-long project in which he and his family went off the grid and attempted to live in the middle of New York City with as little environmental impact as possible. Colin Bevan is here today to tell us about the No Impact Project and his book, No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process. A documentary film about the No Impact Project is also opening in theaters this fall. What led you to initiate the No Impact Project?
Oh, well, if we roll back to 2006, I have been a history writer, a writer of history books, and at that time I was going around the country talking about my last book. It was about World War II, so I was spending my time talking about World War II, but very, very worried about what was happening in the present. And I thought I can't write history anymore because I'm too worried about what's happening about now, which was the fact that we both were wrecking the planet because of climate, but also because I saw this connection between our way of life wrecking the planet. And I also saw in my own friends and community that people didn't seem that happy. They seemed to be working too hard. They seemed to be too stressed and anxious and depressed. So in other words, we had this way of life that was wrecking the planet and not even making us happy. We were wrecking the place and not even having a party.
How do you define no impact for the purpose of the project?
It's impossible to live having no impact. So it's a conceit. But the conceit is that we would reduce our negative impact as much as possible while increasing our positive impact through doing things like volunteering to help plant trees or take plastic out of the waterways or this type of thing. So the idea was that our reduced negative impact and our increased positive impact would add up to become no net impact, which any environmental scientist will tell you doesn't actually work, except that it asks a broader philosophical question, which is it possible to live this life doing more good than harm?
Before we go into more detail, would you give us an overview of your plan for no impact? What were your specific goals?
So many of our environmental systems are in crisis, not just climate. And so I didn't want to just not have climate emissions, but also to not put toxins in the water, not overuse water, not pollute the air, not create the trash. I wanted to be no impact in all, in every environmental sense. And it turns out that learning how to do that is very difficult, especially if you're just like a normal old schlub like I was. So we move forward one phase at a time. The first phase was learning how to live without making trash.
And this is with your family?
Absolutely. My wife, Michelle, and my little girl, Isabella, and our dog, Frankie. And so we kind of move forward. And, you know, the first stage was not making trash, then no fossil fuel using transportation, et cetera, through a bunch of different stages. And I started with trash because I thought it would be the easiest, you know, because you can see trash. But it turns out, for example, that if you're not making trash, you're also not getting any food because so much of our food is packaged. And each stage was a real learning process. Like, how do you buy food without packaging? How do you get yourselves fed? And how do you transport yourself without, you know, using fossil fuels and on and on?
What were some of your memorable experiences in attempting to not create any garbage?
Well, one time, I thought there's this store in the city. I'm from New York City, and there's this store called Integral Yoga, and they, you know, have a whole humanitarian thing. And so my answer was to go to the bulk bins, and I brought jars to fill up because I didn't want to use the plastic bags by the bulk bins. Later, I discovered these muslin bags that you could use to fill up that don't weigh anything. But what I had was these jars, and so I pre-weighed these jars, and I wrote down the weights on them, and I went to the front, you know, and I I got to the front of the aisle in the store, and I thought, you know, I was like, look, I'm not making trash. And I kind of thought that the Integral Yoga cashier would be so proud of me. And she was like, what is this? You know, she just looked at me and rolled her eyes with my big environmental effort. So I was like naive, and I just had to learn and learn and learn.
Let's talk now about your efforts to travel in ways that emit no carbon. What was your approach, and how did you get around?
Well, first, you know, no flying. No driving, no taking trains, not even mass transit. And people say, well, isn't mass transit good? And of course, mass transit is good. But we were trying to go the whole hog and make no carbon emissions at all. And if you take mass transit, you are making some. So what we did was we biked. At first, Michelle was, you know, not into the whole biking idea. But eventually, all of us as a family were biking, and Michelle too, because we were able to get our exercise as part of our daily routine. And it's very pleasant.
What did you find most difficult?
Everybody says that. You know, the question is always what was most difficult. And what's interesting is because we have this meme in our culture that to live environmentally is to deprive ourselves. And of course, there were difficulties. But what's interesting is that what nobody expects is that there are real benefits. So, for example, let's take the fact that we had no air conditioning because there was no electricity. So what we did, instead of huddle alone as a family in front of the air conditioner, we took Isabella and we went to the fountain. And Isabella would play in the fountain while we talked to our neighbors. And so what happened was this consumption-based paradigm got replaced by social connection. So it was very interesting because there were real clear benefits to us as a result of the whole thing.
Going back to the travel, how did you deal with the issue of visiting family who lived far away?
Yeah, with great difficulty, because it turns out that when you promise your mom you're going home for Thanksgiving and then you tell her that you're not for the sake of the environment, she's not particularly impressed. Yeah, so, you know, the one exception that we made for travel purposes, I had promised my mother that we would come home at Christmas and Thanksgiving. And if I didn't want to be disowned, I wasn't able to cancel both. So what we did was we just took one trip and stayed twice as long.
In regard to electricity, you alluded to this a bit earlier. What were the issues there for you? I was particularly interested in how you went about washing your clothes.
Right. So, I mean, if we could have bought our electricity sustainably, we would have. And so the whole thing is, this points to the fact that it's just impossible to buy sustainably produced electricity. And as a result, we had to turn it off. And as a result of that, we ended up having to wash our laundry by hand, or actually by foot, as it were, because what we did was we would throw our laundry into the bathtub. And then I would actually kind of, you know, stamp our laundry to agitate it and clean it. So we would call it Grape Stomper's Laundry Day.
How did you keep your food from spoiling with no electricity?
You know, that was really interesting. It turns out that refrigeration was largely created to keep fresh processed food, because it's, you know, like processed cheeses, which are pasteurized, go bad. Whereas artisanal, you know, the way we used to make cheese, or we used to salt and dry our meats, cheese was actually a technology to preserve milk, because the organisms that live in cheese force the bad organisms, keep them away, right? So what we did is we turned to old cheeses, which stayed fresh. And for our vegetables, actually, we would put them in bowls of water or jars of water in the same way that you put flowers, you know, like our lettuce. And it was so interesting. Of course, it keeps flowers fresh, but who knew that water would keep the lettuce fresh also?
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with Colin Bevan, author of the book No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. How did your family and social interactions change as a result of the project or during the project?
Well, typically, before the project, I mean, Michelle and I were your typical harried media professionals living in New York. And so typically before the project started, at the end of the day, you know, we'd call each other up, argue about who could stay and work late and who would pick up our little girl, Isabella, and go home. Then we'd have this, did you go to the grocery store? No. Did you? No. Oh, I guess we're ordering takeout. And then we'd sit down in front of the TV, you know, get hypnotized in the TV, shovel the food, bad food, start all over again the next day. Then what happened was the TV went because no electricity, and the takeout went because no trash and also only eating local. So all of a sudden what we were doing was, instead of this TV being the center of our lives, the dinner table became the center of our lives. So Michelle and Isabella would come home, I would cook, we'd be in the kitchen, we'd talk, we'd sit down, we'd eat together. And then slowly but surely friends started to imbue themselves into the whole thing, so that we were actually having community meals quite often. In other words, they kind of fast-paced so-called conveniences of the modern lifestyle got replaced by quieter, more community pleasures.
Do you feel you change your friends and their behavior as a result of your project?
Well, one of the things that, as we were doing the project, I had this blog, and, you know, many thousands of people came to the blog, and a whole conversation developed there about how to change. I think people perceive we have both an environmental crisis and a quality of life crisis, and the two are connected. And so this conversation started happening at the blog. In other words, it wasn't just me that was doing this. There were thousands of people actually asking this question of how to live better and more safely at the same time. So the whole project became kind of this focal point for people who are interested in change.
How were your working habits affected during the project, both you and your wife?
Well, you know, interestingly, because we had no electricity, we used beeswax candles, and we were able to sneak one small solar panel onto the roof of our apartment building. So we had one electric light, but, you know, it wasn't a lot of power. So also not enough power for my computer. So interestingly, what happened is, You would think that was a great inconvenience, but what happened was we were forced not to work at night. So the big revolution was that instead of working at night, we spent that time together with as family and friends because we had no power to work.
Did you ever feel deprived during the project?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, the big revelation was that we discovered incredible benefits. But there were, you know, let's say when it got to be November and the days were short and the solar panel wasn't collecting that much electricity and we really didn't have light, I missed the electricity. And so what that tells us is I think we discovered that actually we were consuming so many resources before that they were making us unhappy, and reducing our resource use actually made us happier. But then there's a point below which, you know, you don't become happier. So there's this balance that one, maybe we can find a happier life using less. And then two, that what we need to produce sustainably through working together collectively for a renewable energy system, getting a good wind, solar, geothermal industry going, letting our politicians know that these things are important.
On a personal level, at what point did you find you didn't have enough?
Probably the laundry machine. And, you know, after too long with the laundry, you know, well, one night, Isabella threw up all over her sheets. And then we changed her sheets, and then she threw up a second time. And so the next day I was like, you know what, I'm just going to have to use the washing machine. And so I did. And then, you know, they say it's the first time you use the laundry machine that gets you going. And that was kind of it. That stage, I was just like, you know, I can't do this anymore. And I started using the laundry machine again, which again points to the fact that the way forward to us as individuals and us as a culture is not just about using less, because there's a level below which nobody will be willing to go. So we have to make sure that what we do need gets produced sustainably as well.
Overall, what did you find most challenging in your no-impact project? You alluded to that a bit earlier, but say more.
One of the things that was really challenging, I mean, there was obviously the lifestyle adaptations. But here's the thing. What's hard is habit change. Once you change your habits, you kind of get used to living that way. And so both the book and the film kind of concentrate on the first 6 months, because that's when all the change was happening. And then we just lived it. But really, one of the big hard things for me was the project got a lot of attention as it was happening. And, you know, an author doesn't really expect to get attention until their book is published. And at that, we literally were on so many TV shows wanted to talk about us and newspapers wanted to talk about us. And that in itself was difficult to learn to deal with.
What did you find most enjoyable about the project or fulfilling?
I think that, and I think Michelle would agree with this, is that we were so lucky that it happened just at the age that my little girl was, because it totally set the tone for us as parents. You know, we no longer have a TV. People oftentimes worry about how much TV kids watch, but we kind of discovered that the TV was not affecting our little girl as much as it was affecting the amount of time that we as parents spent with our little girl, because we were watching it, you know. And just spending so much time with Isabella as a result of the project is a gift that we've been given and a habit we've formed, and I think it made me a better dad.
What did you find that was a lot easier than what you might have expected when you began the project?
What was easier? I guess what I alluded to before, that the second 6 months was really no problem. That, yeah, it was hard to learn how to make the adaptations. Uh-huh. For example, once I learned that, you know, when the electricity was off, and then at first the milk spoiled, but then I just learned that I just had to buy the milk every day. Or I learned to put the vegetables and keep them fresh in the water. Or once I learned how to do things, it was much easier. And I guess I was surprised at how normal it all became.
What were some of the infrastructure and custom barriers that made it difficult to carry out your project?
Oh, well, you know, to live sustainably should be like falling off the log. You know, it shouldn't require us as individuals to kind of withdraw from our culture and our systems. And yet it does, because our systems are not sustainable. So, you know, we were before the local food stage started, but we were in the trash phase. You know, we would go to a restaurant, say, and we would be constantly battling the trash. We would carry cloths, our own cloths. Can you take this paper napkin away? Could you not give us it's endemic that we are wasting so much. And so to try and actually move against that is Herculean.
What kind of response did you find when you, for example, asked that a paper napkin be taken back?
Well, actually, as I told you that story, what happened in that, there's this particular restaurant called French Roast, which is right around the corner from our house. And eventually, this happened in a couple of restaurants. It got to the stage where, because it was a neighborhood place, where they no longer brought us the paper napkins to the table, and they would just bring us cloth napkins. So it became automatic, and they automatically didn't put the straws in our drink. And one day, the waiter from this particular restaurant, he said, you know, I was telling some other customers about you. Really? Why? I said, and he said, because I just feel so proud of you. It was so sweet, and it really showed that people were paying attention and then that it was having an impact and that the ripples were going outwards.
What do you see as the role of public policy in creating less environmental impact compared to individual effort?
Right. So I think that we need both. I call it a model of engaged citizenship, where we both reflect our values in the way we live our daily lives, but also that we get involved in our politics on the community and at the national level, because there's no way we can achieve what we need to achieve when it comes to climate change without the help of government, because there's no one other than government that can tell the utilities to stop burning coal. So, you know, I think it's up to individuals in the sense that, one, we can cause the culture to change. We can begin to live differently. But two, we can force the politicians to ask the power companies to change, too.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with Colin Bevan, author of the book No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. In cases where you had an environmental impact, what were some examples of the good things you did to outweigh the harm?
So actually, in some ways, when we started to volunteer, that was the best part of the project, because one of the hard things about living sustainably is that our society doesn't support it. And so when we started to volunteer for environmental organizations, we found a community. I don't know why I didn't think about this sooner, but we found a community that really supported what we were doing. And so, for example, I went with Sustainable South Bronx. I went and helped care for trees in the neighborhood. And it's, you know, it sounds kind of trite to care for trees, but trees provide so many environmental services. They actually take diesel particulates out of the air and so help reduce asthma rates. They reduce the heat island effect, etc. We also volunteered to take plastic out of the rivers, which is really important in terms of the wildlife because it eventually ends up in the ocean. Or we got involved in the River Trust and helped with an experiment that had to do with reseeding the Hudson Bay Basin with oysters. Oysters clean the water and, you know, a whole bunch of different things like that.
What were the key insights you gained as a result of your experiment as the No Impact Man?
Well, two. One, that to live environmentally has real benefits, both on an individual level and a cultural level. And second, that, you know, I started this whole thing because I was in despair about a world problem and really kind of doubted that any individual could make any difference. And I really feel that I learned during this experiment that all of us can make a difference, that so many of us are stopped that we don't even start because we think we're insignificant, but we're not. You know, if we reflect our values and how we live, we can help make big change.
Having now completed the No Impact Project, how is your current life different from before the project started? What habits have you kept and which ones have you decided to do away with?
What I'm so interested in is that a real waste of environmental resources is when we use resources that don't even improve our lives or the lives of those around us. That seems a particular waste. And so what we do is what continues to make sense in our life, you know, what actually benefits us. So, for example, it benefits us not to spend $1,100 a year just to run our air conditioners. And we've given our air conditioners away. And when it's hot, we go and play in the fountain, as I've said. Or, you know, in New York, so many people take the taxi to the gym so they can then run in place, right? So it benefits us to get our exercise as part of our daily lives, so we continue to bike for transportation. Or if with our food, it benefits us to eat food that has no chemicals in it, whose names we can't pronounce. So we continue to buy our food from local farmers who we can trust and feed our little girl food that will make her healthy.
But you have electricity now, I take it?
We do. I think we use about 20% of the electricity that we used before. And that's just because we got rid of the air conditioners. Of course, we don't have the TV. We also never brought the TV back because we found that it was better for our family and better for our relationships without it.
So you're using electricity for light?
Light and our computer and my laptop and Michelle's laptop.
Well, you alluded to this a bit earlier, but could you say more about whether you feel as though your effort as the No Impact Man has made a difference?
I hope so. I mean, it's why I did it. And I think so, too. We have this nonprofit now called noimpactproject.org. And it comes from the fact that so many people were interested in what we were doing. So we started this nonprofit that helps people to choose ways of life that are both happier and environmentally more sustainable. In other words, it's instead of being a deprivation-based approach to environmentalism, it's a benefits-based approach to environmentalism. And, you know, a lot of people seem really interested and want to take part. And so, you know, I like to think that it's helping.
Would you say more about the project and what you actually provide for people?
We provide a few, you know, we're doing school curriculums and all sorts of discussion groups and things. But just at the moment, our main program is a one-week experience where people can day by day be guided through experimenting with reducing their impacts in different areas, while at the same time increasing their social connectivity. In other words, replace consumption with connection. And the idea is to give people a taste and to ask themselves, is it possible that they could discover a better life that's better for the planet too?
Let's go back and talk a little bit more about food. We didn't get a chance to talk a lot about that and how you made your choices there. You obviously chose local and organic. Mm-hmm. What else?
Well, first of all, I went to this organization, Just Food, which is a great organization in New York that helps bring community-supported agriculture into neighborhoods that otherwise would only be stuck with Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's, basically. And they told me that their definition of local food is if a farmer can drive the food to market and go home in the same day, it's local. And so we chose their standard, which was anything within 250 miles was fine. The other things was that we stopped eating meat because beef production is a major cause of climate change. And also we stopped eating fish. So basically we became vegetarians because our, you know, the ocean's fisheries are collapsing.
And how was it for your daughter to make these changes?
Oh, you know, Isabella was pretty much fine with anything. We grew our own vegetables, and, you know, one way to get your kids to eat vegetables is to grow them yourselves because they're like, I grew this, you know, I'm eating it. And anyway, Isabella was just so adaptable through the whole thing. She was kind of our teacher, where we might have felt something was hard. She was, like, just into everything. And so it kind of taught us that, like, what were we worried about? We're just attached to our old habits.
Would you also like to say a few words about your film?
Sure. It's a documentary. It was made by a director friend of Michelle's and another director, Laura Gabbert and Justin Shine. And where the book, No Impact Mine, is kind of my story of the year, the film is their story of what happened to us. And it's opening here in the Seattle area, too.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
That we can all make a difference. Just this question, how can I make a difference, proves that there's something inside us that can make a difference. The fact of that question itself inside of ourselves is this energy that can make a difference. So don't wait for somebody else's directions. Just start, just try, just get involved.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
We have just been speaking with Colin Bevan, author of the book No Impact Man, The Adventures of a Guilty Liberal Who Attempts to Save the Planet and the Discoveries He Makes About Himself and Our Way of Life in the Process, published in 2009 by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. For more information, check on the web at www.noimpactproject.org. Again, that's noimpactproject.org. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the Streaming Archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters Sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.